dream last night. A vision. I saw a world full of people. Everybody was dancing and screaming loud. They were just there to listen to the music. It was deep. It was underground. Let's turn the world into a dance floor.
Are you guys ready for a state of trance? Put your hands in the air, come on!
This is a State of Trance podcast.
Hey, what's up? My name is Ruben de Ronde. Welcome to a new podcast today with Irish DJ and producer. He just released his album Permission to Exhale, and he has permission to speak right now. Kieran McCauley, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
It's awesome to have you back after 3 years, because then you were here just to premiere a single.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, I think we were talking like, if you're going to release an album, you have to come back.
Yeah.
So here we are, 3 years later.
Yeah.
Permission to Exhale.
Thank you, mate. It's been exciting. It's been full of highs and lows, and you know, it seems a little surreal, but I'm here and I'm smiling and life's good.
Yeah, I'm happy to see you smiling. So we have kind of a record amount of questions that we got in from our fans. So we have to focus on those as well. And I have a couple of questions for you myself as well. Starting off with the question of questions. Why did you become a DJ, or why did you become a producer? What inspired you in the beginning of your career to pick this path?
Oh God, in my earlier days, I remember I went to Creamfields underage with my brother. Creamfields, Liverpool. We got the ferry over, and it was Paul Oakenfold. I remember seeing him. I was just hooked. I just was blown away by just his sounds back then, and I came back, and my brother, we got a set of Red Dwarf, no, belt drive turntables, and you know,
yeah,
you know, my brother's still very passionate about it now, but he's a family man, and you know, and he's just proud of what I'm doing. But it took off from there, mate.
So Paul Oakenfold inspired you guys to get turntables.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny that I have the similar story also with my brother. Like, he started DJing and then I started doing it. And we had Paul Denton here a few months ago. He had the same thing.
Yep.
He had his brother with him here in the studio, and it was also him that kicked off everything.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, you know, we would drink and socialize together, and like, he would joke in the pub, you know, as I taught him, or I'm better, I can still, my beat mixing's better, you know, or he would say like, your keyboard skills are basic, you know, he'd just joking.
Sometimes you have to give your big brother a little slack, right?
Yeah,
you're like,
yeah.
Okay, sure. Okay, brother, yeah, sure. So Paul Oakenfold really got you into starting out DJing.
Yeah, fell in love.
And then how long did it take you before you started making music as well? Like, I guess you started DJing first and then started making music.
You remember the Walsh McCauley days? So that was a friend I went to school with, Mark Reynolds. And, you know, he was always the producer side of things. You know, he had the passion for the producing side, and I love getting on stage and dancing and, mm-hmm. you know, getting into the music. And you know, I wasn't going to grow as an artist, I don't think, just being a DJ. We started playing around with a few things in the studio and just a few remixes. And that's why I've done a lot of remixes along the way. But yeah. That's how I started, for anyone wanting to start, dive into remixes. But
yeah, because then you don't need to think about how to create a certain melody. You
yep.
can just take whatever there is and make it your own.
So Mark got me into the producing side of things, and still keep in contact with him now, and he's going down the sort of Injuna Deep sort of style,
okay.
but he's just laid back and not really pushing it as a career. But yeah, I have a lot of time for Mark and love what he's helped me on.
Awesome. Well, I can remember it vividly as well, because I didn't realize until like maybe 2 or 3 years ago that you were actually Walsh McCauley. I didn't link it, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember starting here for Armada. Well, back in the days, we were working like 6 people in the office or something like that. And I did DJ promo. And I also did DJ promo for Cloud9, which is the sister company of Armada, because, you know, it was a small team. We had to do everything ourselves. And one of the labels that I was promoting was Bittersweet in 2007. And that's where you released some of your first releases with Walsh and McCauley, with Bas Kasper signing your tracks, probably.
Bas, and I remember there was a guy called Ono.
Yeah.
And I still can't keep in contact with him from time to time, but I remember those days so well. Like, you know, it's crazy, all these little steps to get you...
to get where you are.
Journey, yeah.
I love it. So 2007, I remember Daytona Sunset. That was a really nice track. That was a good one. I guess you continued that path for about 3 years. You released some solo singles in the meantime, but mostly it was the Walsh McCauley.
Mostly Walsh McCauley, yeah.
And then from 2010 and 2014, we didn't really hear of you anymore. So what happened in that period?
Walsh McCauley started, Mark became a family man, and we started slowing down, and there was just the EDM sort of really put Mark off. You know, he wasn't into it. And then things got really hard with like the sort of John O'Callaghan, the Alien feeling, got really uplifting, and then got really EDM on the commercial market. So there was no room for Walter McCauley, so to speak.
Yeah.
And he started losing the passion for it. I moved to England at the time, and you know, that's when I went solo, and it was a massive step for me because I always used Mark as the engineer, and
you brought in the ideas and he put them into the system. Yeah.
And then now, you know, the first few tracks I was sending off to the contacts that I had, like Giuseppe and Solar Stone and John, and they were laughing like, man, what happened to your music? And I was like, I'm making my own now, you know, and it just, it's crazy, you know, cause I look back at just to what I've achieved. I'm really proud because I did it all just by trying to mimic other sounds, and how did he create that? And, you know, and I've done it just perseverance, endless hours in the studio and how bad you want it sort of thing.
Yeah. I guess that's the key thing you can say to up-and-coming producers, just to never give up.
Never give up.
Never give in, and just work harder than the person next to you, right? That's how it really is. So how hard was it for you to pick up those skills? Because I can imagine that you sit next to Mark for such a long time and you bring in so much ideas and stuff like that, and suddenly you don't have that person anymore. How did you pick that up? How did you make that step into starting to making your own stuff?
Remixes
again.
Stuff.
So you did it.
We'd find like MIDI files online and stuff, and then add drum loops, and then wait a minute, I want to change this. How do they create that sound in this track? And then all of a sudden I'm like, wait, I would think these chords went a different direction, or I can hear it separate, different, and then you take it on a completely different new path, you know? And it was some time that it took me to get to there. But luckily enough, with the Walter McCauley thing that I had going on, I had a foot in the door with some of the producers that give me their tracks to remix for them, or you know, things like that at the start. But it was just perseverance.
That must have been really hard.
It was.
Because you were already like on the way up with a duo, and then suddenly you have to start all over again, basically.
Do you know what? The first track on the album, I just spoke to you about, there's a motivational speaker for the intro of the album. And that's a guy called Eddie Pinero. And at the time, I was facing a lot of battles because, you know, I thought my career was on a high, and then all of a sudden it was stopped, and I was living in England and away from friends and family. And
you moved there for your career?
I moved with an ex-partner, and I was a motor mechanic by trade.
Okay.
So I was spending endless hours in the studio, and then going to the gym in the morning before work, and then back in the studio, and there was no life at all, really. I'm just trying to make it happen. But the motivational speak, what I'm saying is, I found this guy, Eddie Pinero, way back then. And he gave me the motivation and the drive. I would listen to him every morning. And I reached out to him not so long ago about working on a track. He's like, yeah, I'd love to. And like, his career itself is blew up now. He's massive on social media. You should check him out. His work is fantastic. And now to have his speech on the intro of the album, it's just perfect for the title.
It's like a circle complete kind of thing.
It is, you know, because if you listen to the lyrics and what he speaks about, it's about setbacks, and you know, and you think the world's on top of you, and it's not. You know, these are setbacks for a reason, and you know, just remember you are where you're meant to be, and it hits me, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then you finally got back into releasing stuff again. What it felt like to finally have signed a track away of yourself, like a solo track. Do you still remember that moment?
Yeah,
can you tell a little bit about it?
I know it was a track on Giuseppe's Go. I think he only launched the label not so long before that. And it was a track called It Doesn't Rain Forever. And I think that was my first play on A State of Trance.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, Ruben, it's crazy because I would look back down through my phone and I would let screenshot, you know, it comes through on Twitter, goes crazy and from the State of Trance. And you know, I go down through my and I see all the screenshots of A State of Trance from way back then. Man, it's great to be here.
I remember those days that it was before YouTube had a chat, before, I think we didn't even stream it on YouTube because we didn't do that until 800. And I remember that Twitter was a sort of a chat box.
Yeah.
So every time a track got played on the State of Trance, I remember this for myself as well. If a track got played, you had hundreds of tweets.
Yeah.
And then you had like, sometimes even track titles would be trending worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
But everything moved to chat boxes right now. So that's something from the past. But it's at least some memories that you have.
Yeah.
So that was the moment you were like, okay, we're back on track.
We're back on the game.
Let's go.
Yeah. But you know, it's still to this day, you know, I just spoke to you before the show there about tracks that just click. There's some tracks that I work on, I spent years on, and there's some tracks I just open up and they fall into place, you know, and it's just, I still don't know the right or wrong answer, you know. Yeah. People ask me where do I start with my track, sorry, and I think once you get a good foundation, that's, you know, you're onto something solid, you know, the bass and the kick and stuff. But I like to start with the chords and the beautiful part of the track. So
this was, well, you can hear that in your music, to be honest. Like the best way to describe it is like cheerful, emotional, energetic, uplifting.
Thank you.
But you also branched out to some other styles. We'll get to that in just a little bit. But first, I want to go down your timeline a little bit more, because at a certain point, you also started Holy Waters together with Roxanne Emery. Was it something that was just there for one-off, or is it something that you will pick up again in the future? You don't know yet.
I'm not too sure just yet. Roxanne and I worked so well together. Our sounds just complement each other so well. But I think there was just a case of, like, you know, both of us wanted to shine, you know, and it was just, we were beating against each other, so to speak, you know, and I think she's went on her own venture now, sort of more of a rock, sort of pop route, but she still does some trance vocals.
She writes massive hits around in the UK right now.
Yeah, no, her stuff's fantastic, really is, but it just didn't work out at the time, maybe down the line.
I think it was a really nice project. I didn't see that coming back then, and it was nice to have something like that. Yeah.
There was a time, you know, I did Dream State, and I remember speaking to Jeff afterwards, you know, I was like, this is the gig that I've always wanted to play, the highlight of my career. And I brought Roxanne over to sing one of the Holy Waters tracks, which I did at 138 for the end of the show, which wasn't even the Holy Waters track. And afterwards, Jeff was like, oh, I want Holy Waters to tour. And I was like, well, what about Kieran? And he's like, oh, I want Holy Waters. Like, what have I done to myself? You know?
So sometimes you have to embrace those also, I guess.
Yeah, so.
And then, of course, All I Want came.
Yes.
I guess that's a sort of a pivotal moment, I guess, because every time, even now, it seems like every year there's a new remix of All I Want, and then you already know him beforehand.
Yeah.
This is going to be in the top 50.
Yeah.
How can you describe All I Want, what it meant for you when you released that, and tell us a little bit more about the production process of it.
I'm sure you know that there's some tracks that I hear I connect with, and there's those sort of emotional tracks that really hit me. And I remember lying in bed one day hearing the original Codaline track, because it is a cover of an Irish band.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those tracks. It's a male vocal, which you would not even recognize as All I Want. And I did a cover of a cover, actually, for Dream State back in 2018 or something. And everyone was asking, what was this track? What was this track? Everyone was sort of singing that hook, you know, if you love me, why'd you leave me, sort of thing. And I sent it to Armada at first, and they couldn't get the rights for it. And, you know, and then I sent it to Black Hole, and Ram was like, oh, we have to release this. And I said, well, is there a way around it? And they were like, well, if you get it resung, maybe, possibly, not always the case. And we did. And Ruben, it has been the biggest thing in my career. It's crazy. It's like, it's up at 3 million streams now. And so everywhere I go, everyone's like, play your song. I was like, I've got loads of songs. You
know? I have a whole new album.
Yeah, All I Want. It's like, All I Want is not to play it anymore.
Yeah, well, that's a little bit of a pet peeve for any artist, I guess, because you still have to play your biggest tracks, right? Yeah, and if you don't play them, like, people will be disappointed. They will leave. They will walk away and be like, Kieran didn't play All I Want.
I remember doing a gig.
Never going to see him again.
I did a gig and I was like, I remember sitting with my partner. I was like, I don't know whether to play All I Want. They always want it, you know? And I was like, I didn't play it. And then I seen the comments like the next day, okay, he never played it. They didn't even say what track. They just needed to say that he never played it. And I was like, oh my God, I have to play this song.
Yeah. But otherwise you have to make like a new mashup or a new, well.
There's been a few versions of it.
Yeah. Mark Sherry did a fantastic job on it also.
Mark Sherry and Craig Conley.
Craig Conley, of course. Yeah.
And now Dice Berlin's actually just done his own take on it with Bo Bruce.
Interesting.
And very interesting.
Hmm. Okay, well, we'll have an eye out for that one. And then last year, of course, you had If This Is How It Ends. That was a massive success as well. I guess that's also one of those tunes that you can't go around anymore. You just have to play it in your sets, right?
Yeah. You know, I actually have a t-shirt with me. I should have put it on. It's, you know, it says, If This Is How It Ends, Let's Dance. You know, it's just a statement that I think is so good. And that track was with Audrey. She came to me, it was during COVID, and she was like, Kieran, I've made something. I don't know if this is what you're looking for. And when I heard it, I goosebumps straight away. I was like, this is beautiful. Like, you know, there was no sort of hook, where do I go with this? You know, that's why it's got the long breakdown. And it's just, it's another big track for me. And we actually have a new remix of it coming next year.
Okay.
Something I touched on with you before the show about something I'm doing with FSOE, but I have a new version of this track, which is blowing up in my sets now. And that's why I did the t-shirt.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So that's something we have to look forward to next year.
Yeah.
But first, Permission to Exhale. Finally, let's talk about this because you've been working for this. I guess you can say that you started working on this album in 2014, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
16 new tracks. Well, you released a few of them already this year, but I guess 16 tracks.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to go for such a high number of tracks? Because the trend right now is like 8 or 10, part 1, part 2.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to
And there was, more Ruben, believe it or not. Because it's my first album. I didn't know what I was doing or what, you know, I was asking Arnie at Black Hole, big shout out to him as well, by the way, for wanting me to do this on the label. But I was like asking his advice every step along the way, and we just went with it. You know, even releasing 8 tracks before the album's even out. You know, everyone was like, when are you going to release the album, man? You've already done 8 tracks. I said, well, that's only half, you know.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we could have split it into 2. I don't know. It's going great. I'm happy with what we've done, but there's no direction on my path. So I took Arnie's guidance and it's proved well.
So Arnie came in with feedback like, you have to start like this and build the album like this.
He's like, mate, don't do just all out, you know, album. And I was like, I don't want to, you know. So there is some slower ones in there, a lot of softer drums and stuff, but it's mostly energetic stuff.
But I'm very curious because I haven't heard it yet. I only heard the tracks that you've released so far. And of course, what you played in your guest mix, of course, which was really nice. I didn't see that coming because like 2 or 3 weeks ago, we played the track with Susie Letch that you told about. The slower kind of track. Yeah. I was like, wait a minute, is this Kieran McCauley? Why did you decide to go for a little bit slower stuff on the album as well? Or was it just something that you wanted to challenge yourself, not to only make uplifting stuff for the album?
Well, going back to the Walter McCauley days, you know, that's where my sound sort of started out. You know, my inspirations would be Chicane and stuff like that. And even to this day now, I would listen to a lot of Ben Bomer and Lane 8.
Mm-hmm.
More so Ben Bomer now, but it's those warm sounds, you know. You can't really, the warmth comes from the sort of the slower sounds, you know. The more uplifting stuff, you need the white noise, the energetic stuff, and you can't get that in the
there's no warm blanket.
No, not at all. You try and create it in the breakdown, but then you go all out, you know. And so when Susie sent me this vocal, it was like, I don't want to go too hard on this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back to the Walter McCauley sounds, you know, the guitar, the sort of the groove and the bass and the drums, and it just, it's a beautiful track.
Yeah, I agree. That's why we played it on the show, of course.
Thank you.
Good job. So the you already told us about this a little bit in the broadcast, of course, but Permission to Exhale, that's the album title. And I know that like, I follow you on social medias. I've seen what you've done throughout the years with inspiring people, trying to be a coach, I guess, also to the people that follow you. Why did you decide to go for deep title like that, Permission to Exhale, and what does it actually mean for you?
Yeah, so like I said in the show, Ruben, it was like, I was trying to find the words for this because it's been a long, long road. And, you know, people I went to school with, everyone, you know, about the road, just think, oh, Kieran, he's high flying this, that, and this. They don't know what goes on, and you do, obviously, as an artist. And it's very challenging. It's got these windy roads. And you know, once I got this album done, I was working on it. I just felt like I have made it. You know, maybe I am someone, you know, I could be proud of myself here. And it was just that expression of relief of like, maybe we're here, Kieran, you know, own up to it and sort of speak.
So you finally allowed yourself to be like, okay,
yeah,
I finished this. I can be proud of myself. That's why it's Permission to Exhale. So let me try to put this out into other words. You just tell yourself with Permission to Exhale, the album is done. You're like, okay, now you can unwind.
And try and enjoy it.
Try to enjoy it. That's the hard part.
Yeah, chasing the dream, chasing the next stage. And, you know, it's trying to be happy and, you know, not content, but happy.
Is that also the story that you try to tell with combining these tracks into an album?
You know, I wanted to go down that road, but I just realized I was giving myself a massive amount of work, which a lot of people might not even noticed, or, you know, unnecessary work maybe. But there's some tracks in there, like the beautiful No, I explained to you. Mm-hmm. That track, the title itself, the beautiful No, is it came from, you know, a lot of people don't even know how beautiful the word could mean.
Yeah.
You know, because those setbacks, you know, every time you get the no, it's giving you the ability or the chance to stand up and push harder and harder, which is making you stronger as a mm-hmm. person. And I believe that was the last track of the title or the album, and it's got that big you used the word earlier. What was it? It was like a
victory trance,
you know, yeah. And that's it. You know, it's the last track on the album, and it's like the beautiful no, all those no's, all those setbacks, and we are here. And
what is the hardest no that you ever had in your career? If you can talk about it, of course.
I don't know. A lot of the iconic sort of gigs and festivals that I've wanted to play, you know, you've been penciled in and then all of a sudden you're not on the lineup. Those were they're the big setbacks that get you, you know. And then my friends on social media, my close friends, and like, I owe so much to them, you know. They get too involved sometimes. They're like, oh, I've just seen the lineup, why are you not on it? And I was like, I know I'm not on the lineup.
Yeah. It hurts.
Yeah.
How do you overcome such a no then? Like, but because that's something that we address in this podcast a lot of times as well, because we got to where we are right now because a lot of no's. So up and coming artists that look up to you, they might have to deal with that in the future. So how do you deal with like such a no?
Well, I've been blessed. I'm huge into fitness and sort of the health and fitness route. So I'm very disciplined. Mm-hmm. So I have my rituals and routines that sort of keep me sharp and keep my head focused. Mm-hmm. You know, this morning I was up in the gym before I came here and in the sauna and challenging myself mentally, because the harder you push yourself, you know, mentally, physically, you know, you're going to build a stronger mindset. And these are principles I've learned from the fitness journey that I was on. So it's everything that I've sort of did along the way has led me to where I am now. Even Ruben, I did art for a while, you know, on my social media, a lot of people comment on how good it looks. You know, I did a lot of art and big into fitness, and, you know, I'm big into discipline and mental toughness. And like I said, it's been a windy road and tough, and I'm still standing here. And
how do you combine all these passions? Because you're already listing like a few big ones that take a lot of time already. How do you find the time to produce an album while you're doing this fitness journey, and while you're doing art, while you have a partner, and while you're DJing as well? How do you do this?
Well, when I started back in 2014, then I was sort of living on my own. Well, around 2016, 2017, I was living on my own. And to be honest, Ruben, it was quite, that's when I started to see a lot of the darker sides, you know, because I was on my own. You know, I was in England and I was up at the gym like 5:30, 6:00 in the morning, mm-hmm. pushing myself nonstop, and I ended up getting a burnout from pushing so hard. And, you know, and it was all about the music, watching the lineups, you know, no support here, and, you know, cursed you a few times, and, you know, you know, and it was like, why? And you think the world's against you, you know, and mm-hmm. it's not. And so when I came back now to Northern Ireland with COVID, I've met a partner, and things have been a bit different, because now I can see why people maybe couldn't have put in the effort that I did. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm actually progressing more now. I think I've got a life and there's more of a balance. Mm-hmm. And I'm not so focused on why not? And I'm moving forward.
You give yourself permission to exhale.
Back to that, yeah.
I like that, to be honest. Like, I think you have a good point there, because we've all been in that situation that you're like, hey, why am I not playing this show? Why is this no? Yeah. And I think what you're explaining right now is beautiful, that you take like a step back, but in the meantime, you take a step back, but you're going to take a leap forward because of the mindset that you've created for yourself. Yeah. I think that's beautiful.
Yeah. You know, my younger brother at the minute, he's training with me in the gym, and I'm here now, and he's texting me this morning on the stepper, you know, and even the silly little things that I'm texting, you know, just push yourself, you know, when your mind's saying get off, no, don't, mm-hmm. you know, do another 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you know, those one or two extra reps in the gym, you know, intermittent fasting, silly little things that got where you're strengthening your mind.
Yeah.
You're becoming stronger, and it's people don't do those things. Unfortunately, you know, one bad habit leads to another, like one bad ritual, you know, you maybe have a beer and then you have a pizza, or, you know, if you get up and you have a salad, you'll have a glass of water. It's like one step leads to the next, you know, one good step. So it's little things that I've learned along the way. And maybe Eddie Pinero has a lot to play on that, the motivational speaker.
Is it something you want to do in the future as well? Be even more motivational to a lot of people?
I'd like to try and inspire a lot of people. But I like to live a little bit as well. I'm sure you've seen Party Kieran, you know, also.
Yeah.
So
I'm just the right balance, I guess.
Trying to find it, and I'm still looking for it, Ruben. But yeah, we're here, and I'm happy, and it's we all are looking for the balance. I've never found anyone that says they found it.
That's true. Yeah. And you can enjoy pizza sometimes a little bit.
Of course.
As well. All right, let's jump into some questions that came in, because I say there was a lot of them that came in. Carlos Vegeto wants to know, what is the story behind the beautiful track Tears Don't Mean You're Losing?
Okay, well, actually, this was a track I said to you before the show. Those chords were originally written with Walter McCauley a long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. And it was with a vocalist, and we just couldn't get the track to sit. And, you know, it just went into the bank like we all have, you know, just an endless supply of unfinished tracks. And
here to finish, yeah.
Yeah. And I always remembered it. I had those lovely warm chords, and I dug it out and kept working on the track, and I had all these vocal samples and started just gelling them together, working with the chords, changing and stuff. And I was like, this is beautiful. And it literally, tears do come to my eyes. Some tracks, I'm sure you get that, you know, and when I'm in the studio, and this was one of them. And, you know, the whole thing behind it was just, it just fell into place, especially around COVID at the time. Ruben, you know, a lot of people like stuck at home, and, you know, it was during tough times, and yeah, this track just came in a perfect
time. You can't even picture those times anymore.
No, it's crazy, yeah.
And you do this a lot. Like, you take like meaningful double layered track titles. So why did you choose Tears Don't Mean You're Losing? Is that also like a positive message again? Like, you can, it's happy tears.
It was just, yeah, well, at the time, you know, it was just, I was working a lot with a mental health group in Northern Ireland. I still do bits and pieces here and there, but, you know, it was just to remind people that just because you're crying, it's not a sign of weakness, you know? Tears do not mean that you're losing. You know, people see someone crying, or, you know, feel that you're weak. Weakness is not necessarily a losing.
I love that. Fegan76, Amy's done, and Alesso Italy have the same question. Any collabs coming up? Who, any female DJs, vocalists that you're working with, or who would you love to collab with? So it's a bunch of questions come to mind, but it's all about collaborations. Okay. First of all, let's start with something very big on your album, because you worked with, well, a famous vocalist. Tell us about Lisa Gerrard, right?
Lisa Gerrard, yeah. Yeah, it's crazy, because a lot of people, I would scream about this track. You know, for me, I'm big into the film scores. I'm sure yourself, like Hans Zimmer, those sort of, you know, producers sort of look up to that sort of level of art. And I'm working with Lisa Gerrard, like, who? You know, I say the Gladiator film, like, no way, you know? So it's like, maybe she hasn't got the right credit, or maybe she hasn't been advertised enough. Or, yeah. But yeah, so this is the second track I've done with Lisa. I did a track, A Thousand Roads, and that's how I fell in with Jeff Rona. So he does a lot of composing with Lisa. And this track was just something, Jeff sent me this about 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And I was like, oh man, I think you should work on this track with Lisa. And it was very dark, and I'm sure you can hear yourself. It's not my typical sounds. And I was like, not sure if I can really work. Well, that's, the tempo was so slow. So for me to try and get it up to our sort of BPM, it was challenging. But years went by, I opened the track again, and I was like, it's Lisa Gerrard. It's like, the voice is beautiful. I have to do something with this. And the direction it went with it, it really works. It's not the typical Kieran McCauley sound, but it's turned out really well.
Another one, Permission to Exhale afterwards. As soon as that was done, you're like, yeah. Because I know how it is. Sometimes there is projects in your folders. You're like, you're working with some people, so they are kind of waiting for you. So there's pressure. Yeah. Sometimes you get that email and you just want to delete straight away. Is there any progress on this track? Yeah. There's also pressure on your back. Like, I need to finish this. I need to finish. And then you finish it.
Yeah, big time. You know, and this is one thing I've learned about the album as well, is there's so many vocals on there. You know, a lot of people would say all my tracks are vocals, and they're not. I do love the vocal stuff. But I had 8 vocalists going, when's my track being released? Oh, why this and why that and why this? And, you know, am I getting the video? And, you know, I want to be this and that. And I'm like, you know.
It's too much sometimes. Yeah, I understand. Why I enjoy a good, how do you say it, vocal on a track, because it gives such an extra meaning in general.
It does.
And also the question that came in here is, who would you love to collab with in the future?
It's a question we all get asked a lot, obviously, as an artist, but I would love to work with Chicane. Mm. you know, you've got the typicals, obviously Armin and, you know, and Ferry. We've already started
already
on something.
Did, yeah.
We've started on another.
Mokara follow up, okay.
Yeah.
Little scoop here. Ding, ding.
But maybe Gareth Emery as well. Ali and Fila, you know, there's a few people that I'm knocking on their door, you know, and just waiting to see what will happen, you know.
Interesting. Now let's, keep us posted, especially there with Ferry Corsten. Follow up with Mokara, that's interesting. Stefan de Jong wants to know, you've done a lot of remixes, a lot of bootlegs. What was the most fun one to create?
Oh, I don't know. This was like the album as well, you know, which was most fun. It's whenever I finished every track on the album, Ruben, I would text my brother, my closest friends, partner, this is the best track on the album. This is the best track on the album. All those reworks.
They're like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, all those reworks, like, oh my God, this is the best one. And then I was like, actually, no, this is the best one. So it's hard to say. At the minute, I've just done a cover of Hillsong Unite, Oceans. It's a gospel song, which it's blew up all over TikTok for the past couple of years. But I put it together for my sets. It's another one of those tracks where I didn't want to go too hard on and kept the drums softer, but still tried to give it that energy. And it's right now going really well for me on TikTok also. And I haven't even finished it. I sort of wrapped it up before I went on tour and played it at my last show in Belfast, and everyone's asking for it. And I'm like, what about the album? You know, I was stepping on my own toes again.
Yeah. Well, on TikTok, you only need 15 seconds, so you don't need to finish it anymore. Jerry Charbonneau wants to know, what is your most memorable favorite show that you've ever played?
I still keep going back to Dream State 2018. It was my debut in Dream State. And I remember jumping up on the stage. I was like, do I do it? Do I not? I'm going all out here. Jumped up and they put the spotlight on me and I played my remix of Ocean Lab Satellite.
Oh,
and everyone's singing it and I'm going,
whoa. This is it? This is it?
Yeah, I literally had like about two beers and it was just a pure natural high. I was standing going, Jesus, the goosebumps I got off, and I was just shaking with excitement.
Yeah, there's something magical about Dream State, that's for sure.
Yeah, there really is. I haven't seen many places like that, to be honest. Yeah. California, sort of passion with trance.
There's so many people just going there and they know every single track. It's just something very special about that. Well, that's the questions for you right now. Rest me to say, massive congratulations. Permission to Exhale.
Thank you.
One of the essential albums of, well, not only this year, but this decade, in my opinion. Because
thank you.
You notice how much work has been done in this album. So Permission to Exhale, Kieran McCauley, essential album. Thank you for dropping by. Thank you for the guest mix. We're going to record another special 1 hour mix also, which will be on our socials very soon. Kieran McCauley, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. To check full episodes of A State of Trance for free, simply visit ArminRadio.com. A State of Trance returns next week.